ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मामैवंशजीवलोके जीवभूत सनातनः मनक्षस्तानि इन्द्रियाणि प्रकृतिस्तानि कर्षति। Translation: the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
You don't need a translation for that, huh? Significado in Spanish. Okay. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, eternally.
జీవుని యథార్థ రూపం ఈ శ్లోకం నందు స్పష్టంగా వివరించబడింది. యథార్థమునకు అతడు శ్రీకృష్ణ భగవాను శాశ్వత అంశము.
I'm going to explain things as we go along, however Krishna inspires. So, I heard a lecture where Prabhupada explained part and parcel means. When you hear Prabhupada say, part and parcel, this is what Prabhupada says he means. Prabhupada gives the example of the finger as part of the body. So it's two things. We don't say, I finger. We say, my finger. So it's part of something greater. And it also means that the part is to serve the whole. Like the finger serves the function of giving nourishment to the stomach, which then distributes the strength and nourishment to the whole body. The part serves the whole. So there's these two meanings with part and parcel. Whenever you hear that, you immediately should connect. It is not that the part and parcel living entity assumes individuality in his conditional life, and in the liberated state he becomes one with the Supreme. He is eternally fragmented. Now, this is chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, but in chapter 2, very early in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna taught the same thing. What is that verse where Krishna taught the same thing?
Natveva.
You know, but okay. Anybody know? So, chapter 2, text 12, Krishna says, never was a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Too cold. So, two things. The individuality of the soul goes back that way and goes that way. Never in the future shall we cease to be. We are individuals now. We eternally were individuals in the past. And into the future we eternally be individuals. Never was there a time when that individuality didn't exist. nor in the present is that individuality not existing, nor in the future shall it cease to be. But there are some persons who say it ceases to be. So who should we listen to? Those persons who say it ceases to be? Or Krishna who says it never ceases to be? I'll stay with Krishna, thank you. In the previous verse, which is the first instruction that Krishna gives to Arjuna, this is the second instruction Krishna gives, Krishna dismisses the bodily conception of life. So it's not that individuality is because we have one of these things, a body, and the liberated state is we no longer have a body, so we lose our individuality. Wrong. Individuality is on the spiritual platform. The material platform of identity of self has already been dismissed. It is clearly stated, sanatana. Now Krishna is going to speak about the distinction between jiva and Vishnu tattva. According to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu tattva, and the secondary expansions are called the living entities, jiva tattva. In other words, the Vishnu tattva is the personal expansion, and the living entities, jiva tattva, are separated expansions. This separated expansions phrase is the angsa. Angsa means fragmented. Fragmented. Like you take a whole and you chop off part of the whole and it fragments the whole and the fragment is over there. That's the part and parcel of the whole, or angsa. So there's Vishnu tattva and there's the angsa, which is jiva tattva. In this example just given, our Ishopanishad teaches Om Purnam Adak Purnamidam. When the Purnam expands into another Purnam or some angsa, the original Purnam is not diminished. Continuing with the text, by his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms like Lord Rama, Nrisimhadev, Vishnumurti, and all the predominating deities in the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansion, the living entities, are eternally servitors. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual identities of Godhead, are always present. Similarly, the separated expansions of living entities have their identities. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme, the living entities also have fragmental portions of his qualities, of which independence is one. By scriptural reference and logic, Prabhupada is establishing the same point. The same point is the living entity's individuality is eternal. And that is, by this logic, the qualities of the whole are found in the part. Whatever the qualities that Krishna has, the living entity has. Krishna has all beauty, living entity has some beauty. Krishna has all strength, living entity has some strength. Krishna has unlimited free will, living entity has tiny free will. Krishna has unlimited independence, living entity has limited, very limited, very tiny independence. Eternally, as eternal as the soul is, as eternal as Krishna is, that independence is eternal. Now, where does Prabhupada go next? Where he goes next is, we have this independence. It can be properly used or misused, and that determines the conditioned or the liberated state of the living entity. As you're hearing this, listen to the difference between the bhakti conception and the impersonal conception. We already heard the impersonal conception. Liberated means, everybody knows, become one with the Supreme. Everybody knows that one. But not everybody knows, in the liberated state, you properly use your free will and serve the Supreme. That's the liberated state. So listen carefully how Prabhupada explains this conditioned, liberated state distinction. Prabhupada writes, by misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal, as the Supreme Lord is. He's as eternal as the Supreme Lord. In his liberated state, he is freed from the material condition, and he is under the engagement of the transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain in the material world. Now, where does Krishna describe this same idea elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita? That is the distinction between the conditioned stage where one has to struggle very hard to maintain material existence, or alternatively, one acts in harmony with the will of the Lord and is free from the modes of nature and that difficult struggle. What is that verse? Mama maya duratyaya daivihi yesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante maya mentam tarantite. Krishna is very consistent. It may appear to somebody that Krishna contradicts himself. But it's because they haven't understood. It's not because Krishna contradicts himself. He's making the same point, and Prabhupada is explaining it in the same way also. Now Prabhupada is going to drill down and look at what the conditioned state is like. And then you go back up to the liberated state. Drill down. The conditioned state is the mind and the false ego very strong. And they direct the living entity away from his self-interest into this karshati or hard struggle program. And because of the force of false ego, one stays in that hard struggle. Even one doesn't like the hard struggle. Force, the false ego compels, and the mind continues to go, 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 trying to find happiness in the realm of false ego. It's never going to end. It's always going to be painful. Struggling very hard, karshati, manakshastani, indriyani, prakriti stani, karshati. So first the conditioned state, then the liberated state. Let's listen. The living entities, not only human beings, and the cats and dogs, but even the greater controllers of the material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They are eternal. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word karshati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned souls, the conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in material existence. When the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. When the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species. So now Prabhupada will explain the liberated state of the Aṃsa, the living, eternally fragmented living entity, in this liberated state. It is clear, however, in this verse, that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses, and when he is liberated, this material covering perishes. But his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhyadinayana Shruti. It is stated here that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face. And he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. From Smriti also it is understood, Vasanti yatar purusha sarva vaikunta murtayaha. In the spiritual planets, everyone lives in bodies featured like the Supreme Personality of Godhead's body. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there is no difference between the part and parcel living entities and the expansions of Vishnumurti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This information is sublime, and it's beyond what the verse itself is saying. Krishna's giving us, or Prabhupada's giving us, a bonus. Because the verse is describing the conditioned state. But to understand one thing, what it isn't, also helps. I'll say it a different way. A good definition of something is both inclusive and exclusive. A good definition of something is both inclusive and exclusive. For example, what is bhakti? Bhakti is this and it's not that. Anyabhilasha trishunyam jnanakarma janavratam. That's what it's not. That's exclusive. And then what it is. Anukoyena krishna anushilanam bhakti rutama. Or let's say a mridanga. A mridanga is a drum, but it's not a one-ended drum, it's a two-ended drum. But it's not a two-ended drum where the sides are equal, one side is bigger and the other side is smaller. Because there's so many drums. When you define something clearly, it's what the thing is and what the thing isn't. Inclusive and exclusive is a good definition. So Prabhupada is doing that here. Conditioned life is clear. And the liberated state is also clearly identified. It's not conditioned life, nor is it merging. The liberated state of the soul is very wonderfully, very nicely described. Spiritual form, the mind and the body dissolve through the influence of bhakti. Lord Kapila Dev teaches the same thing to Devahuti. Isn't this nice news? In the liberated state, the mind, the material mind, dissolves. But then there's a spiritual mind and a spiritual body and a spiritual form of the Lord who we're seeing and talking to and interacting with and serving in a loving way in a spiritual body without a material mind, without this struggle. Manakshastrani indriyani prakriti stani karshati. Dissolved. But full activity, full variety, full individuality, proper use of independence in the spiritual realm. Last paragraph. Prabhupada is speaking particularly about Mamme Vangsa, that first phrase in this verse, fragmented part and parcel. So he does two things with this. It's fragmented eternally. That's one sanatana, jiva-bhuta sanatana. It's not that once upon a time there was this one Brahman and some expert person came along with a hammer and chisel and knocked off some pieces and made it fragmented. But you just then join the fragmented parts and once again it becomes whole. You become one. No. The fragmented parts are sanatana. The second message in the purport, this last paragraph, is that when properly joined, it's joined in service. There's this qualitative oneness as the particle of gold is to the gold mine, as the drop of ocean water, its salt and minerals is one qualitatively, but the part is tiny and the whole is much greater quality or quantity. So he ends with that explanation, the oneness and difference notion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We will now hear Prabhupada's words, the final paragraph, and then see if there's some questions. The words Mame Vangsha, or fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are also very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. We have already understood in the second chapter that the spirit cannot be cut into pieces. The fragment is not materially conceived. It is not like matter, which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That conception is not applicable here because the Sanskrit word sanatana, eternal, is used. The fragmental portion is eternal. It is also stated in the beginning of the second chapter that in each and every individual body, the fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is present. Dehi nosmin yata dehi. That fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky, in a spiritual planet, and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also gold. Any questions?
Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you said here that Mukta stage means to the resolution of material body and material mind. But many people, just like the Srila Prabhupada, many people come here as ambassadors. So in that stage they can dissolve their material mind. Of course they come with pure mind. So we see their body dissolved. Nashnamaitavantanil. So how can we understand that?
Yes, sir.
So how can we understand that? Yeah, perishing slowly. So how can we say that? It's material. So how to understand, Maharaj?
Good question. I could give a really far out answer. I could give a real simple answer. I'll start with the simple answer. Prabhupada once, I was in a class when Prabhupada was explaining that to try to understand the mind of the spiritual master itself is an offense, because the tendency is to think of the mind of the spiritual master like mine. And my mind might go like this and might go like that. So the spiritual master's mind, what is he thinking? Maybe like this, maybe like that. There's a the material elements, when fully engaged in service to Krishna, become spiritualized. That's the sense that they act in a spiritual way, although it certainly looks like they're made of material elements, and in fact dwindling. They take the sixth sadvikar process is taking place even with the body of a pure devotee. But you know, even if you were just to touch one of the hairs on Prabhupada's head, I mean, you place it on your altar and it's taniya, it's spiritual, because it's in relation to one who is fully engaged in service of the Lord. And this is the understanding of the liberated soul. Because when the soul is fully engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they become qualitatively like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and even their body becomes spiritually surcharged, acts spiritually just by touch with that which is spiritual, coming in Prabhupada's presence. Persons that had no idea. There's a very nice story where two very nice stories, Prabhupada stories. When Prabhupada was sitting in an airport in Sweden at a time when they didn't have the security kind of considerations. Only ticketed passengers can go into the departure lounge. When Prabhupada was present, the devotees filled up the whole airport. What to speak of, crammed into the departure lounge. So people were passing by, seeing all these devotees and Prabhupada sitting there. And just by Prabhupada's presence, they were being respectful. This was very, very early when devotees didn't so much even know to pay obeisances. One businessman was walking by and he turned and stopped and was stunned to see Prabhupada sitting there. And he paid obeisances. A businessman in a suit right in the airport paid obeisances to Prabhupada. And then Malati told this story. When Prabhupada was first coming to visit from New York to San Francisco, the devotees had made an arrangement for Prabhupada to attend a function, a big concert where, you know, very famous yucky tamagun, rajagun musicians were performing, and Prabhupada was going to be there. So he was flying from New York to San Francisco. And many of the devotees, Malati was describing, she had never seen Prabhupada before. It's a very nice story. And they didn't have, as they have now, where planes come and hook up to the jetway. It was like here in India. They park over there and you walk into the... So they watched everybody get off the plane. And Nobody saw Prabhupada get off the plane. So Malati said, I was thinking anyways, why does Swamiji have to come by an airplane? He can just, you know, come flying like Superman and just... He has mystic powers. He can do anything he wants. Why does he need an airplane? So they were watching as the people were coming up the stairway and coming into the lounge. And Prabhupada wasn't there. Then all of a sudden, she said, they saw this glow of light. And as the glow of light became brighter and brighter, Prabhupada was coming up the stairs and he turned around towards in their direction. And for the first time, she saw Prabhupada. And all the devotees at once, again, they did not know the practice of paying obeisances. Everybody just paid obeisances. And as she was paying obeisances, she looked right in front of her nose and there was Prabhupada's shoes. She thought she was dreaming. And she looked up and like a little puppy dog and looking at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was just smiling. People that didn't even know what to do in the presence of a pure devotee, somehow by the influence of the body, the presence of the spiritualized body and soul, pure devotional soul of the spiritual master, somehow did the right behavior just by spiritual influence. But it doesn't act in a material way. Although it may undergo those sadvikars. There's more. The soul of the pure devotee, as Prabhupada explains here, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, manifest spiritual form. That spiritual form has spiritual mind and spiritual senses and spiritual activity that we cannot perceive manifest on this plane, but the pure devotee is eternally engaged along with their regulative duties for the purpose of instructing others. Internally they're engaged in their personal service to Radha and Krishna. So that's the more esoteric understanding of all of this. Once Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, he had just arrived from India and came over the Pacific Ocean. And Prabhupada explained this same thing in a simple way. He said, my disciples are always very anxious to find out what is Swamiji doing. Oh, now Prabhupada is in India, but soon he'll be heading to America. First he'll go to Japan, and then he'll go to Australia and New Zealand. He'll stop in Hawaii, and soon he'll come to Los Angeles. And in each place, you're very busy in finding out what I am doing and speaking. He said, but you should understand, in fact, I am always in Vrindavan with Krishna. That is the fact. So in this way, we should not think of the spiritual master, pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, in some ordinary way. He is his body and now he's getting old, and just see, he's struggling also with his six senses, including his mind. That is the wrong understanding. It's an offensive understanding. Okay. Anything else? Question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Alvars, we hear Andal Alvar, she merged into the deities. She entered inside the deities, we hear. And in the case of Shishupal also, so when Krishna chopped his head, so he merged or he entered in Krishna. Then how we can understand these two insights?
This Shishupal example is described by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's a situation where mukti, he didn't like mukti pade svadayabhak, he wanted to change bhakti pade svadayabhak. Because mukti implies becoming one and it's abominable. Then he says, of the two kinds of sayuja mukti, wanting to become one with the body of the Lord is more abominable. So there's becoming one with the effulgence of the Lord, another is becoming one with the body of the Lord, which is what Shishupal did, is more abominable. But in becoming one with the body of the Lord, we should not misunderstand, that means Shishupal became Krishna or something. Hardly. It's a temporary state where the Sayuja Mukti is where individuality is suspended, just like during Susupti or during deep sleep, during anesthesia. The individuality of the living entity is suspended, but not lost. So that Sayuja Mukti is where individuality is suspended, but not lost. And after some time, again manifest as individuality in fullness. So that's the Shishupal example. And the Alvar example, I don't know the particulars, so I can't describe in relation to the particulars, but Janava entered into the deity form of Ananga Manjari in Vrindavan, and others, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So what the particular spiritual identity of that, you know, in any given case where that has happened, I can't comment on without knowing the particulars. But it doesn't mean that they lost their identity. They have their identity. Like, you know, Krishna comes together in the morning in Dwaraka, and there's 16,000 Krishnas, and he becomes one Krishna. Or Krishna went to go visit. This is different. This is not a living entity in Krishna. It's Krishna and Krishna. Krishna becomes, when Krishna merges like that, then it's like when he went to visit Shrutadeva and Bahulashva. They both wanted Krishna to come to their home, so Krishna became two Krishnas and went to their home. So he went back to Dwarka, he became one Krishna. So that's the sense where it literally, because Krishna's identity is one. But all other entities are the part and parcel. Their sense of entering into the deity form, for example, is not that they become the deity. Their sense of individuality, they're accepted again into the spiritual realm of Krishna, let's just say that. And whatever their activity is in service to Krishna, whatever Mother Janava would do in service to Krishna, that goes on eternally. In that sense, we can understand the entering into the deity form of the Lord, kind of an invitation by the Lord to accept a degree of intimacy that is extraordinary. But individual activity would continue in serving the Lord. It takes twice as long to do this when you have translation. So we ran out of time. But thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hezone Zompa Swami Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.